Well, welcome to Voices of Women. I'm Chris Stainis, your host, and also the founder of Women of Wisdom Foundation. We are in our 30th year celebrating a gathering with women. Oh my God, I mean, it's just hard to believe that we have reached 30 years. And it's a fabulous weekend. It's the second year we're going to do online for reasons everybody knows, but is just as powerful, just as intimate, and a life-changing event. So we invite you to check it out at womanofwisdom.org. Our keynote speakers are Rianne Eisler and Cynthia James, and they're going to really inspire you. And we have lots of experiential workshops and panels of interesting topics for women, and it's going to be fabulous. So check it out, womanofwisdom.org. And today I have one of our presenters, Sylvia Hayes. She is a writer, a speaker, and teacher in the areas of personal spiritual development and economic evolution in the living world. She's the founder of Sylvia Hayes Enterprises and the Rethink, and faculty in the Sustainability Department at Oregon State University. She's the former First Lady of Oregon and an award-winning environmental and anti-poverty activist. She authored When Life Blows Up, A Guide to Peace, Power, and Reinvention. She's a certified Tony Robbins, Chloe Mendez life coach, and she is nearing her completion, or maybe she is complete now, the Unity Urban Ministerial School, not yet, but getting there, and serves on the Unity Worldwide Ministries Earth Care Core team. You can check out her offerings and what she does in the world at Sylvia, and that's with a C, Hayes.com. Her workshop at Woman of Wisdom is Sacred Economics, Create a Beautiful Economy That Works for All Beings. And she's also guiding our panel on sacred activism about the economics and everything else that we can be active about. She's got a diverse group of women coming together to talk about many exciting things. So welcome, Sylvia.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Yes, well, just getting to the economy. I remember I was just thinking today, oh, I took economics in college, and that was one of my worst courses. It's like, you know, economics, for women, it sounds so boring, and yet we all are impacted by it. And I think more and more we've been aware of the problems in our economic systems, that people are wanting change, but what do we do about it?
Yeah. So. Yeah, it's a really large topic. And I really like to remind people, though, so when you poll on what people, especially what Westerners think of the economy, they tend to pick terms like a force of nature or an act of God, you know, and actually, it's a set of systems. It's a set of human-made systems that we have created, and we shape it and redirect it all the time. So we're currently on a trajectory, and we have been for some time, in our current form of capitalist economy. And I'm not anti-capitalist. I'm not socialist. I don't think we've yet created a system that is suited for where we are. I think we need an evolutionary, you know, that's why I call it economic evolution. But we're in a paradigm that says the economy has to grow all the time to be healthy. Mm-hmm. And it grows based on a consumption-driven model. And we're on a planet of finite resources. So that fundamental unsustainability is really becoming evident in so many ways right now.
Yes, that's true. And so what is happening out there? What changes do you see, or do you want to see, and what changes do you see happening?
Well, the first thing I would want to say is there is a robust and growing new economy movement, and it has been gaining momentum for a long time. You just don't hear about it in mainstream media at all. But, you know, I would point folks to the New Economy Coalition. There's the New Economics Foundation. There are many things and links to some of these on my websites. But these are people like myself, you know, I am mid-50s, but from the time I was really young, I really didn't want to be a conventional part of the corporate America economic consumption-driven system, even though we can't completely escape it because it's the matrix, if you will, that we are existing in. But this movement toward a different way of doing things, first and foremost, it asks the right questions. Does it make sense to have a limitless growth economy? it doesn't. We at least need to be asking growth of what and for what, right? What do we want to grow? Just simply growing the GDP, the gross domestic product, all that measures is how much money is flowing through the economy. It doesn't differentiate if that money is being spent on education or juvenile jail. The same amount of money spent in those two systems boosts the GDP the same way.
Well, it's fascinating. And I think many of us think like, what can we possibly do to change it? You know, what can I do to change it? I mean, I have to have a job, I have to have money, I have to buy things, and we have things we need, and then we have things we want. Sure. And I think something that COVID has taught us is there's been a little reduction of the want, what we want, like we're making do of like, we don't have to have everything.
Well, I think, again, this gets down to, and we'll cover some of this in my workshop, some really fundamental questions, you know, what is enough? What is enough? And is there actually a point of diminishing returns where more stuff not only doesn't make it all that much better, but can even make your life more complicated? I mean, we've all been there, I think. We're in a culture that is awash in stuff, right? So what is enough? How do you define enough? And what really has value? Like this is a scary term, but I truly believe that we are in kind of an apocalyptic age now. And remember, apocalypse actually means unveiling what is hidden, the uncovering. And I think what we're seeing now is an uncovering of some fundamental flaws in how we've organized ourselves as a global species in many ways, that pieces that need to be changed, and they're going to be changed. So climate change, for instance, I believe is a symptom of this broken economic model, because we have a system that makes it artificially cheap to use fossil fuel, and nobody really winds up paying for the pollution. And so therefore we're all beginning to pay for it now. Those of us who are here in Central Oregon in February, having a 70 degree day and no precipitation on the horizon. So I think it is a daunting time. I'm not sugarcoating that, but it's also an exciting time because we needed some upheaval, in my opinion. We needed some disruption in order to be able to birth a new world. And that world is already being birthed in many ways. The new economy movement, there are a number of authors that I'll share in the workshop too that have wonderful books about this. And I know, yeah, back to your opening comment, in college they would call economics the dismal science. And I kind of agree with that. And I want to make sure that people know I don't approach this topic from the perspective of let's talk about, you know, neoclassical economics, whatever. What I'm talking about is the concept that we live in a paradigm that says, here's the economy, and environmental concerns or even social concerns are a little subset of that, right? The truth is, here's a planet, we're all dependent on it, and the economy is a subset that we've created that is now really doing some damage to our planet and to a lot of fellow human beings. So what I really want to get people doing with my work, I want to get them questioning. When they hear some elected official say, gosh, isn't it great, GDP grew by blah, blah, blah. I just want more people to question, should that really be the goal? You know, how are we doing? And as we do that, we're going to have more and more models that start to reflect a different way of interacting.
Mm-hmm. It's almost like we need to flip that, and you know, flipping the consciousness. And there is a country, you might know, maybe it's Bhutan, that they're like their gross GEP gross, what?
I've been in Bhutan. I've done.
Yeah, but it's about the happiness quotient. Yeah.
It's the gross national happiness yeah. index. And the thing that's so beautiful about that is their king at that time who, many years later, decided they should be a democracy and just handed over his reign, which is tells you how extraordinary he was. He said, you know, the happiness of my people is more important to me than their productivity. And that's when they embarked on this this very robust initiative to come up with a different way of measuring the progress of their country. And I will say, you know, again, most people's eyes glaze over when you start talking about GDP, but we created the GDP coming out of the Second World War. And even the guy who created it at that time, and it was useful because it helped us see where the economy was growing and how we could shift resources to areas that we needed, right? But even the guy, Simon Kuznets, who created the GDP said at the time, don't use this as a sole metric for the progress of your nation. It's not enough, but we've been doing it. We hooked onto that wagon and we've been there ever since.
And I would garner to wager that if you focused on happiness, your economy probably will boost up naturally. Because if we're happy, that means we're living in our passion. We're living what we want to do and we're happy. And that comes back to us tenfold.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, doing this work, when I was actually serving as first lady, when we went to Bhutan and did that work, and we got kind of, the governor and I got kind of skewered by the media for, oh, going off and studying happiness and is blah, blah, you know, fairy, you know, we got kind of eaten alive for it. And the point that I would make is that the happiness index that Bhutan uses, it's not just a light and fluffy thing. It is 26 different metrics that they weigh decisions through. It includes things like maintaining their cultural integrity, of course, the environment, well-being, education levels. And to give you an example, you know, one of the things in the economy that was beginning to boom in Bhutan was tourism, because it had been closed and suddenly it was open. It's this beautiful little country in the Himalayas, right? It's a jewel. And they had a contingent who wanted to start doing helicopter tours. And they weighed that through the lens of the National Happiness Index. They weighed the cost for the infrastructure required. They weighed the quiet that they would lose, the noise, all, and they decided at the end of the day, it wasn't a good investment. You know, it's very robust. And, you know, I also kept pointing out at the time, it's like, you know, pursuit of happiness is actually in our foundational documents in the US. You know, maybe we should be thinking about that a little bit more.
Yeah, yeah. And I know Bhutan is, they limit the number of tourists and that, you know, it's to protect their culture. Yeah. And so, yeah, I mean, and I would love, I've been wanting to go there. But yeah, it's kind of lost here. It's lost of we're so commercially driven. And I know, I mean, you can look around my background here, you know, my books, all the stuff in my house I have that, yeah, I desire to get rid of it. But, I go in stores and I go, all this stuff isn't going to be sold probably. That's probably, where does it go?
Yeah, well, boy, we could do a whole separate show on this. That's not necessarily true. So like right now, one of the biggest damaging industries to the environment is clothing, and a whole bunch of clothing that gets made doesn't get sold, but it's made so cheaply that they have no real outlet for it. This is one of those things you almost don't want to know about. So a whole lot of this stuff gets shipped to Ghana, mostly gets shipped to Africa, where it goes through a resale market there. And they literally have villages living on piles of discarded textiles that will burn for all year. I mean, it is such a catastrophic problem. The cheapest at all cost kind of approach that we've got in place right now. So it's our species globally is just coming to a comeuppance with this consumption and waste driven model.
Yes. So I want to get to, because your topic, and even in the panel, sacred activism. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about, you know, how is activism sacred, and what are you bringing to that whole activism field of?
Yeah. Well, I think I'm excited about the panel because we do have a really nice diversity. We have a diversity in age. We have a diversity in spiritual backgrounds coming to it. And the point that, you know, I've been an activist my whole life. And up until the last 10 years, I would say that my form of activism was a part of the problem. You know, it was an us versus them, the whole battle language, right? We got to fight climate change. We got to fight big oil. And I still have elements of that that I am evolving and maturing through. But it's like Einstein saying you can't solve the problem at the same level of thinking that created it. And so often our activism does, because it is in that kind of combat model. And so sacred activism is really a way of how do we as spiritual beings stand up for things that we care about in a way that's not in the same level of consciousness that created those things. And I don't have all the answers. I wouldn't claim to have all the answers. You know, I'm not much of a Bible person, to be very understated. But it reminds me of, you know, I can't remember where it was, but the notion of being in the world, but not of it, you know, taking action to make things better. I take action, you know, in whatever small ways I can to raise awareness about shifting this economic model, but I don't attack the people selling plastic widgets. I may want to, but I don't, right? So I think on this panel, and it's not just all about environment or economics for sure. It's gonna be about race issues, gender issues, all kinds of activism. How do we bring our best spiritual practiced self into work, actual work to make our world better? I happen to believe I'm in unity, I'm in the New Thought movement. Those of us who are, especially I think, on a path that would call ourselves spiritual rather than a specific religion, really, I think we're here for a reason at this time. And I believe that I would broadly call that New Thought. I hope I don't offend anybody, but I think it has such a critically important role to play right now. And I don't think it's enough just to do our own meditation and prayer in our own comfy little practice zone, and then just be oblivious to what's happening in our world or to our neighbors or what have you. So that's what we're going to tackle, and we'll see where it goes.
I know our language. I mean, if you really think about it, but I was thinking as you were talking about that, and this kind of New Thought language, it's, you know, it's bringing our truth and speaking with the awareness of also listening, like listening to the other side. I mean, how can we have these conversations and it's not a battle if we don't listen to the various viewpoints and feel heard if we're in that place of, well, I'm not going to, you know, I'm combating that, or I'm not going to listen to you because what you say is, you know, not a value to me, but, you know, to know what our values are, to know what our truth is, and to speak from that authenticity, but also with the awareness of listening, to come to any kind of common ground, you have to listen.
Yes, you do. And I will tell you, I am really delighted to say I'm so much better at that than I used to be. The way my family was, the way I was raised, when one of our mouths weren't moving, we weren't listening, we were reloading. Right. Okay. So, but that's part of the problem now, you know, and we live in this is another part of the economic system that we're in, is the for-profit corporate media structure that wants to set up this, that wants to keep this us versus them and this sense of outrage going. And it's hard right now, you know, there is a lot of polarity of belief. Gosh darn, the COVID vaccine is just such a great example, you know, how crazily politicized that became. Mm-hmm. So this is why I think our movement, I think people who are aware of themselves as spiritual beings, who are aware of our interconnectedness with all things, even if it's a struggle to live that way at times, we have work to do. And sometimes it's our own inner work, for sure. And then it's also demonstrating. I love to point out, I can't remember where I recently heard of this. It was actually in my ministerial studies, which I have finished the 900 credits, but still have the internship and all that to do. But the concept that Rosa Parks didn't was her right to sit anywhere on the bus, right? I mean, so I love that, because when I'm into activism, how can I not just go and tear down another person's belief? How can I demonstrate a better way of being, a better way of doing things? I think it was Buckminster Fuller who said, if you want to change a system, don't just try to tear the old, I'm terribly paraphrasing, but don't just try to tear the old system down, create something that's more attractive. So there's a lot of that going on right now. You know, there's just a lot of it. I'm a Gen Xer, and a lot of people in my generation have been ready for a big disruption in the system, because the system doesn't fit us. We don't feel it. And it's not just my generation, younger folk, you know, there's a lot of that right now. And that gives me hope. And that I refocus on that when I'm having, you know, despair over some of the other things that I'm seeing, because I love this planet as a living being. It's that level of a connection for me.
Yes. And I think what we need is hope. And you mentioned the media. It's like, we don't hear what's going on of, you know, I think there's some amazing things being creative of that will possibly give some solutions to the environment or other things that, you know, it's like getting the resources where you can read about these things, because that gives hope. Like, and there is a whole new generation of people who are, you know, it's like thinking outside of the box and realizing there are solutions, and we need to hear what's going on. So every once in a while you hear a story and you go, wow, that's going to be fascinating. Wow. Where are they going to go with that idea? And creating a solution of, you know, like getting all the plastic out of the ocean, or all those clothes that are going to Ghana. I mean, all those things, there are solutions if we can think out of the box and work together to realize there's a problem to begin with, which is awareness and getting that out there.
For sure. And you know, one of the things I will share in the workshop there, I have over the years, especially when I went through the big crazy media blow up that led to my book, it really shifted how and where I get my news and what I even consider to be news. I mean, I'm still very politically engaged. I'm still kind of a news junkie. On election nights, I intentionally switch back and forth between MSNBC and Fox. And it's like flipping in between alternate universes. And both put, you know, so I think one of the things that is both useful, informed, and also more hopeful is to be disciplined and put a little effort into where we get our news. Mm-hmm. And I have, you know, there are a number of outlets that once you know, you have to find them. They're not big corporate cable news, so they don't get a lot of airtime, but there is a lot of good going on. A lot of it. And I'll share some of those sources, the ones that I find useful.
Yeah, that'll be great. And there's even a place, even people who aren't in your workshop, there's a place on our Whova site on the community board where you can share that, or you can even have a little meetup and talk and share about those things. Because I think we want to, you know, we're kind of lost, like, where do I find those? And you're a resource for that. So that'd be great. So one thing I want to ask everybody is how the theme, which I didn't mention, celebrating our sacred pearls, nourishing the waters of the feminine. How does your workshop fit into that theme?
Well, I think where I went to immediately with it is pearls of wisdom, right? So celebrating sacred pearls of wisdom is where my mind went. And, you know, I fully believe that regaining some sort of healthy balance between masculine and feminine in the ways and the choices that humanity is making on this planet right now is critical. And I believe we all have masculine and feminine. So it's not just about, you know, having elected women, although that's important in places for sure. But I think with this, you know, we're in a very, very masculine frame in this economy. It's very much about, you know, competition and survival of the fittest, which is all BS, really. You know, it's a cooperative model that works. So we'll tackle that. I think that will come through. And I think listening to your point, we're at a point where the toxic masculine energy that has been driving the large decisions for our species on this planet and for this global economy, it's created a big enough mess that I think those pearls of feminine wisdom are not only needed, but they're starting to gain traction. So we'll talk about that. And hopefully in Q&A and whatnot, I'll learn from others what they have to say about that.
Yeah, that's true. And there's that's what happens at the conference, and presenters are participants as well. So Sure. Thank you so much for being on the show today. Can you share your website and what you may have to offer there for people?
Sure. It's sylviahayes.com. It's C-Y-L-V-I-A. I didn't do that to myself. H-A-Y-E-L-S.com. And then I also have, I'll talk about this in the workshop, I have a little organization that I stood up right when COVID hit called The Rethink, R-E-T-H-I-N-K.org. And that's got more about the sacred economics piece. And there's a link to it on the sylviahayes.com site.
Okay, great. Well, thank you for being here today. And everybody go to womanofwisdom.org, check out the schedule. You can read about Sylvia's workshop and the panel. And yeah, we would love to see everybody there. And I'm still in the process of interviewing more presenters, and they'll all be up on our website. So you can go back and watch all the videos of our presenters. So thank you.